morning. It's good to be here. I appreciate the opportunity for being able to be here and bring the lesson this morning. This being sort of the youth retreat weekend, the topic is picked with that in mind to some degree. So let's turn to Joshua chapter 24 and verse 15. This is more of a lesson to provoke us to thought and to decision making, and not so much an in-depth study of more in-depth principles. But anyway, in Joshua 24 and verse 17 or verse 15, we're all pretty familiar with this verse. I know Joshua is speaking, and he says, "If it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom ye will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." You know, we have a choice to serve God or not. And until we choose to serve Him, we've really chosen to not serve Him. To serve other gods, as it talks about here. For us today, those other gods may be the god of money, the god of material things, or worldly pleasures. But we choose to either serve God or not. And, you know, once we choose to serve God, we continue to have a choice. We have a choice to either to continue to serve Him or to turn our back on Him. Look in Psalm 10 and verse 4. In Psalm 10 and verse 4, it says there, "The wicked through the pride of his countenance will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts." When we choose to not seek after God or to stop seeking God, when we choose to keep God out of our thoughts, it says here that we are choosing wickedness in essence. We are choosing the way of the wicked. And, you know, we don't want to do that. In Psalm 53 and verse 1, he tells us, "The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Corrupt are they, and have done abominable iniquity. There is none that doeth good." I mean, when it comes to trying to keep God out of our thoughts and our hearts, we've gone the way of the foolish, he says here. So this morning, what we want to talk about is the foolishness of not choosing to serve God. Whether it's never having made the choice to serve Him, or after making the choice to serve Him, maybe we turn our backs on Him. We want to see some of the reasons why it's so foolish to reject God and not to make that decision to seek after God and to serve God. And, you know, hopefully this can help us all. If we've never made the choice to serve God, maybe this will give more serious thought, make us have more serious thought to make such a decision. If we've made the decision to serve God and maybe we've turned our back on Him, maybe it'll help us get back on track. If we're faithfully serving Him right now, hopefully this will reaffirm why we want to continue to serve Him and strengthen our resolve to serve Him and be faithful to Him unto death. Now, while there are many, many reasons that demonstrate the foolishness of turning our backs on God, this morning we're going to emphasize what we might call some selfish reasons. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 19. In 1 Corinthians 15 and verses 19 and 32, Paul is writing here and he says, if in this life only we have hope in Christ, we are of all men most miserable. And then in verse 32, he tells us, if after the manner of men I have fought with beasts at Ephesus, what advantageth it me if the dead rise not? Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Now these inspired words here suggest to us that God doesn't expect us to serve Him for naught, you know, but for the advantage that it brings us. And if there is no advantage, as he says here in verse 32, if there's nothing in it for us, these words teach us that we might as well just eat and drink, live for today and forget about the consequences of our actions. But of course, we know that there is advantage to serving God. And Mark 8:36 even compares it to gaining the whole world. There Jesus was teaching about what it took to follow after Him, and He reminded us in Mark 8:36, for what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? You see, there is something in it for us to serve God, to choose to seek Him. And the advantage that we can expect is greater than gaining the whole world. I mean, maybe we have some idea of the significance of gaining the whole world. I mean, just imagine if we gained all of the world's treasure, all the world's power, all the world's pleasures. Well, the value of saving our souls in eternity doesn't even compare to that. That's how valuable it is to serve God and to honor Him. Remember Esau in Hebrews 12:16, it says there that he sold something of extreme value, his birthright, for just a pittance, one morsel of meat. Well, this is what we do when we turn our backs on God. We forfeit something of such great value for something far less than even the whole world, you know, and sometimes for nothing. So again, even gaining the whole world doesn't compare to the saving of our souls, but we sell out for far less. And how many really gain the world? Of course, you know, nobody really gains the whole world. When we sell out and choose not to serve God, it's for far less. And sometimes we don't even get what we sell out for. We end up getting nothing in this life or the next life. For instance, look at Proverbs 27 in verse 1. So what we're trying to do here this morning is look at some reasons as to why it's so foolish to not seek after God, to not choose to serve God. And the first one here that we want to get at, look at Proverbs 27 and verse 1. He says, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. You know, from this passage, we learn that we really know nothing about what tomorrow might bring us. We have no promise of seeing tomorrow. We could die any time. So let's say that we decide to sell out, you know, like Esau did. In other words, we decide that we're not going to serve God because we want something else. We want the gain, the pleasures of this world, or the riches of this life, or whatever, but we decide, you know, I'm going to sell out. I know it's foolish, but we're going to do it anyway because we want that gain of today. So we turn our backs on God, we sell out, and tomorrow we die. Now, what have we gained, you know, when we do that? I mean, not only have we lost our souls, but we've gained little or nothing for it. You know, that we sold out for, we enjoyed it for what, 12 hours, 24 hours? You know, not even a few days of pleasure. What sense does that make? You know, it just doesn't make much sense. In Luke chapter 12, verses 16 through 21, Jesus told a parable concerning this sort of thing. In Luke chapter 12, verses 16, "And he," that is Jesus, "spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." So here's someone who's not being rich toward God, laying up treasure for himself. And what is required of him that very night that he makes this decision to lay up for himself? His life is required of him. And so the first reason why it's so foolish to choose to not serve God, you know, is because we could die at any time. And if we sell out, you know, we've gained nothing. You know, probably the biggest reason that this reason doesn't move more people to serve God is because we just won't believe it can happen to us. You know, but how many of us in here, I'd be willing to say that probably everyone in here knows of people who have, that you've been fairly close to and have died a premature death in early adulthood or even as a teenager. It can happen to us. And it possibly will happen to us. And so it's foolish to put off choosing to serve God. Well, the next point, look in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7. In Galatians 6 and verse 7, the scripture teaches us, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap." You know, this is a general rule in life. We reap what we sow. Now, there's various applications to this general principle, but we want to emphasize that in this life, we are likely to have to endure consequences for our decisions and actions. And I know there's exceptions. We all, you know, occasionally one smokes heavy in their entire life and lives to be 100 years old, you know, experiences fairly good health, or one drinks heavy and avoids all the many ways that alcohol can destroy one's life. And even spiritually, if you look in Jeremiah chapter 12 and verse 1, even spiritually, sometimes one can live a wicked life and not seem to have to pay anything for it in this life. In Jeremiah 12:1, it says, "Righteous art thou, O Lord, when I plead with thee. Yet let me talk with thee of thy judgments. Wherefore doth the way of the wicked prosper? Wherefore are all they happy that deal very treacherously?" So here he talks about, you know, one who lives this wicked life, and yet they seem to prosper from it. So even spiritually, there are exceptions to this general rule that we reap what we sow. But let's not fool ourselves, you know. So often, and as a matter of fact, the rule is that we do suffer unpleasant and sometimes serious consequences for the poor decisions that we make in life. I mean, take Cain, for instance. If you look back in Genesis 4, verses 11 through 13, we don't have to read all that, but Cain made a poor decision once in his life, right? He killed his brother. And did he experience any consequences for that? Well, he did. He was punished of God. And what did he think of his own punishment? In Genesis 4, 11, it says, "And now art thou cursed from the earth, which hath opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee her strength. A fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be in the earth." And Cain said unto the Lord, "My punishment is greater than I can bear." You know, he thought his punishment was too much. Not even the righteous, have to sometimes pay dearly for their mistakes. You remember Noah in Numbers chapter 20 and in verse 12, it tells us there Noah, because he struck the rock instead of speaking to the rock, was not allowed to bring Israel into the promised land. Or what about David in 2 Samuel 12, verses 10 through 12? He was a righteous man. He was a man after God's own heart. But he did mess up once, we know. He sinned in the matter of Uriah and the Hittite and with Bathsheba. And he had to pay for that severely. You can read about it in 2 Samuel 12, verses 10 through 12. Well, you know, this rule holds for all areas of life, doesn't it? That we reap what we sow, whether it's spiritual, emotional, educational, work-related, medical. I mean, generally, if we put the proper efforts into our studies, we'll make good grades. Now, again, I know there's exceptions. And generally, if one gets lazy and we don't put effort into our studies, we don't make good grades. You know, again, there's exceptions. Generally, if we work hard and are faithful to our employer, we'll be rewarded. If we're sloppy and get, we'll get demoted and get fired. You know, if we do healthy things, we'll stay healthy. If we do unhealthy things, we'll be unhealthy. I mean, this is a general rule. Did you know that they say about 50% of cancers in the United States would be prevented by the proper lifestyle choices, or 60% of all the medical problems in the United States today are lifestyle related for the most part? So this is a principle that, you know, is pretty true. We do reap what we sow. Well, if we look in Luke 15 and verse 13, this is about the prodigal son, and how that he chose to turn his back on God in essence. And if we do what he did, if we refuse to serve God and turn our backs on him because we want to go out there and partake in some riotous living like the prodigal son did, then what's going to happen, you know, to us? We do reap what we sow. And so say we want to mess with alcohol and drugs, you know, for instance. You know, the media is real good in helping us out about this. They glamorize the evils like alcohol and drugs. And they make us think that nothing could possibly happen to us. I mean, some of the cutest commercials, right, are the beer commercials. Something that's so destructive is portrayed in a positive light. Well, what the commercials don't show you when it comes to alcohol and drugs is someone kneeling over the toilet barfing their guts out, or the teenager drowning at the lake because he's so stoned he can't remember how to swim, or the college student who falls to his death as he stumbles off a balcony. That happened again this year. The little girl crying because her father's been killed by a drunk driver. I mean, disrupted families, lost jobs, destroyed lives and relationships. The rule does generally hold, we do reap what we sow. Have you ever seen anyone dying of cirrhosis? You know, it's not a pretty sight. Skin and bones, muscles wasted away, their eyes sunken in, the skin yellow, the abdomen swollen with fluid, so weak that they can't even lift a glass. I'm not making this up, by the way. I've seen it. Or have you ever seen someone who, as the doctors joke, have pickled their brain with alcohol? It's sort of pathetic to see a 30-year-old lying in bed with the brain more like a 1-year-old or Josiah back there, you know. A nice smile, but, you know, what's going on in there? And he does have a nice smile, by the way. Or maybe we want to join in the sexual immorality that's rampant in our land. Again, the magazines, the TV, music, movies portray this as a normal, expected, reasonable, mostly harmless sort of behavior. But did you know that essentially all cervical cancer is due to sexual promiscuity and a sexually transmitted virus? And while there are many other causes for it, a large percentage of infertility today is caused by sexually transmitted diseases as well. And then, of course, we all know about AIDS. And yes, there's some innocent ways to get AIDS, but a lot of times it's reaping what one sows. And besides the medical problems, there are the emotional scars of something of sexual promiscuity, taking something that's so intimate and special that's supposed to be reserved for marriage and making it as common as sharing a meal or going to the movie with someone. You know, and we could go on and on, but the point is, let's say, okay, we decide to turn our back on God and enjoy a little riotous living, the pleasures of sin, and the treasures of this life. Well, are we ready to suffer the consequences of that? Poor health, premature death, trouble with the law, strained and destroyed relationships, guilt and emotional turmoil. I mean, we bargain for the pleasures of sin, but we get the tragedies of sin instead. And so we see the foolishness of turning our backs on God and selling out. Let's go to the next point in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 22 and 23. And we'll be looking at in Ecclesiastes a fair amount here, so if you want to keep your finger there. In Ecclesiastes 2, we've talked about getting what we might expect in life, the expected. Now let's talk about the uncertainty of life, getting the unexpected, what might seem unfair, both things are true. I mean, we're not talking out of both sides of our mouth here or anything, you know. There is a general rule that we reap what we sow, but there's also this thing that, you know, sometimes life just doesn't seem fair, you know. There's an uncertainty to life. In Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 22, Solomon here writing, of course, says, "For what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is also vanity." I mean, here it describes a man who desires in his heart. He has desires in his heart and he labors for that. He works for it. And maybe he even works for it fairly and justly and diligently. But what does he get for all of his labor? Is there any guarantees? He says here he gets sorrow and grief, no rest for his heart. I mean, where's the justice and fairness to this life? Look in Ecclesiastes 9, verses 11 and 12. In Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11, he says, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them." I mean, again, where's the justice and fairness in this life? One works and becomes the swiftest, but he doesn't win the race. One works to become the strongest, but he doesn't win the battle. The wisest, but he has no bread. One comes to have great understanding, but nothing to show for it. A great skill, but no one really cares. I mean, the point is that so many things in life just seem to be by chance, unfair. There's just no guarantee to any certainty in this life apart from God and His promises, right? I mean, we can contrive elaborate plans for our lives. We can set out to fulfill our dreams, and then suddenly, you know, just like that, we're hit with something totally unexpected. Maybe it's sickness or disability or tragedy or financial loss. You know, why did the star football player back in my high school days have a wreck and become a paraplegic? Or why did the pretty girl with the sweet disposition that I knew come down with a mental illness and commit suicide? And more recently, I think about my sister, you know. Why did my sister, who's the epitome of health, no bad habits, eats great, vegetarian most of her adult life, exercise regularly, not an ounce overweight, you know, why did she come down with stage 4 cancer? And I know that everyone here knows people like that, that they could talk about, some very close to you. In John chapter 9 and verse 3, Jesus taught about a man in John chapter 9 and verse 3 who had not sinned. It wasn't that he had sinned nor his parents that he was blind. It was a man who was blind, and his disciples asked him, you know, "Why is this man blind? Did he sin? Did his parents?" And Jesus said, "Neither has he, this man, sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him." I mean, why did this man have to be the one to suffer blindness so the works of God could be manifest? Would you volunteer for that? You know, I mean, it's... you know, sometimes life is just uncertain and not fair, as we might say. You know, for no reason, what we would consider fair reason, we might suffer great loss or tragedy or even death. And then what? You know, what would we have? Well, without God, we would have nothing, right? Solomon summed it up well again back in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 12 through 14. Ecclesiastes 1, verses 12 through 14. He said, "I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit." I mean, he summed it up well. He gave his heart to seek and search all these things out, and this is what he concluded, that everything that is apart from God and serving Him, everything is vanity and vexation of spirit. It's all just empty. It's all worthless. It gains us nothing. So what's the point here? Let's say, okay, once again, we turn our backs on God. We decide we're going to turn our backs on God to get ahead in this life. Maybe not even to do anything horrible. Maybe we don't do anything horrible to invite trouble our way, but nonetheless, we labor for the things of this life. So once again, tragedy comes our way, spoiling our dreams, maybe even death, where we have no second chance. And then what? We lose our souls, and again, we have nothing to show for it. Not even the temporary thrills of this life. And so, foolish? Well, it sounds like it, you know. Foolish to choose to not serve God. The final point we'll look at is, look in Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And we'll read verse 1 and then verses 9 through 11. And here's the third reason, basically, why it's so foolish to not choose to serve God. Here, Solomon again is speaking of himself in Ecclesiastes 2:1 when he says, "I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity." Then drop down to verse 9. He says, "So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun." So, what do we learn from Solomon here? I mean, you know, even if we were like him, even if we, like him, were successful in experiencing greatness and increase and wisdom, and we could satisfy all the desires of our hearts, one day we'd come to realize, just like Solomon did, that it was all for naught. It was all vanity. It was all just empty. There's no profit under the sun for any of this. Look in Ecclesiastes 5, verses 10 through 16. Now, you know, Solomon had every right to speak these words. He knew by firsthand experience what he was saying here in Ecclesiastes 5. And, of course, these are inspired words, and words of wisdom from God, but Solomon, he experienced this. Ecclesiastes 5:10, he says, "He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. And as he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind?" So, you know, the point is there really will never, ever be true satisfaction with the things of this world. I mean, if this is where our heart is, success will only bring us grief and worry. You know, if our heart is set on the things and the pleasures of this world, you know, even if we're successful, it's going to bring grief and worry. And one day we'll come to realize that and to see that. So what might we conclude with? Well, of course, the words of Solomon in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13, where he said, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." So let's not be foolish. Let's not make the mistake of the fool. The whole duty of man truly is to fear God and keep his commandments, to choose him, and to never turn our backs on him. Apart from God, there is nothing. It's all vanity and foolishness. Even if we were to gain the whole world, live a long, good life here on earth, it still wouldn't be worth it. And besides, what's really the chances of that? You know, what's really the chances of realizing our dreams if we turn from God to go after the things of the world? I mean, we hear about that once in a while. You know, so-and-so decided when they were this tall that they were going to be a millionaire, and they went after it, and sure enough, they gained it, you know, or whatever. But, you know, that's the exception rather than the rule. But, you know, it's when we have such lofty dreams, it's not that often that we see those dreams fulfilled in our lives. But, you know, even if they are, even if we do are successful in fulfilling our dreams, and maybe we avoid the wrong decisions so that we don't suffer difficult consequences, you know, like we were talking about, life is still uncertain, so uncertain that we could be left with nothing to show for giving up the blessings of God. And once again, if things go well, we experience life to the fullest, we think. But one day, like Solomon, we're going to realize that we have really profited nothing. So to end where we began, Joshua in Joshua 24 and verse 15 said, "Choose you this day whom ye will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." So he tried to give us some reasons to help us make that decision to serve the Lord and not to turn our back on him or to sell out for the things of this world. If there's anyone here today who would need the prayers of the church. We want to offer a time to come forward if you need to make that known or to make a request. If you've been studying and being taught about being a disciple of Christ and have come to that point that you recognize you are ready to be His disciple, you've counted the cost, and you're ready to be baptized with Him in water, we're ready to help you. Come and make it known as we stand and sing.
Would you be free from the-